Let me say a little thing about Dr. Seuss, because you're going to get to know this. Your kid gets a little older and starts picking their bedtime stories. You might want to jettison the Dr. Seuss books because they are so long. And so when your goal is to have, you know, two stories and then get your kids to sleep, you don't want them picking Dr. Seuss books, or bedtime is going to be 11:30.
Are his stories longer than this one?
Maybe.
Hello and welcome to episode 61 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. I am Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me, as always, is
Adam
in
Vancouver.
Country.
Canada.
We've been through this.
Yeah. For anyone paying attention still,
oh,
it's
no,
Canada.
I meant you and me. We've been through, it could be Vancouver or Washington. We don't know.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe this time it is.
Captain George Vancouver was very popular.
Yep.
Yeah. But no, Vancouver, Canada.
Yes.
What's going on in Canada?
Canadian dollar is rising.
Is it?
Yeah.
Against the world or against the U.S.?
Against the U.S.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I pay attention to because I don't go anywhere else. I go from Vancouver, Canada to Washington. That's
right.
Pretty much my move. I go to Seattle, right? Made reference to that before.
Don't you, when the dollar gets high, don't you open up a U.S. account?
I have
Canada?
A U.S. account.
Yeah, just for that reason.
Yeah, when the dollar's high, I buy U.S. dollars. When the dollar is low, I do not.
There we go. See? You learned something unphotography related.
Yeah, banking today. Related. There's the move.
Yeah.
Buy high, sell low.
How do you remember your PIN code? That's what I want to know.
I don't remember it. I have a struggle.
What did you shoot this week?
Okay, well, I didn't go to Seattle, Washington. This weekend, my wife and I went to Victoria. My parents live in Victoria, and we did a little house swap. They came and watched our kids in Vancouver, and we went to their house and had an adult weekend in Victoria. So we did a few things we wouldn't normally do in Victoria, like walk around downtown. So
I love downtown.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice nice city. So I took a few pictures in Victoria downtown, and they live kind of close to the water. So, you know, we took a little walk down to, they have kind of like a little beach area, beach access, a little block from their house that few people know about. So I took a few pictures down there. And just a few pictures around their property. They have some really nice tall trees. And I'd seen in a magazine a little while back about, you know, how to take a few tips on taking a really neat tree picture, like from the bottom up, you know, where you find mm-hmm. some really tall trees, which they happen to have, and shoot it from the base of a tree up looking at the sky. So I experimented a little with that.
Nice.
How about you?
The good thing about Victoria, I find, is that it's pretty small downtown.
It is. You're not being sarcastic with that statement.
No, you got your Government Street kind of thing, all the stores and whatnot.
Yep.
Is it Government Street? What's the other one? Blanchard.
Yep.
And then you got sort of the waterfront with the Empress Hotel, where they shot some Mickey Rourke movie in the 80s.
I don't know what you're referencing.
The Empress Hotel.
No, I know that. I don't know the Mickey Rourke movie.
Oh, some movie from the 80s.
Okay, great.
And then you got the Parliament buildings right across there, which light up at night.
Yep.
You take any pictures of any night pictures of that? You must have taken pictures
over
the years.
No, we didn't stay that late, so it was a daytime excursion.
Uh-huh. So you got horses and carriages. It's a pretty good spot down there.
There's lots of stuff, and you got whale watching tours, which they have locally as well, but it's a big thing. They've usually got some street performers and artists down on the waterfront there.
And then just behind the Parliament buildings, you can go down to Dallas Road and walk all along the water, drive along the water all the way down to this is a tourism episode for people going to Victoria.
Yeah. It is a nice spot though for pictures.
Yeah, and if you want to go out, it sounds odd, but you can go all the way down to Ross Bay Cemetery, which is this really old cemetery. And as such, tends to look pretty cool, and it's right on the water.
Okay, we did not do that.
Next time.
Yeah.
It's very popular. Like, a lot of touristy stuff happens there. They have tours and whatnot. So,
not of the great. Cemetery.
Of the cemetery, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Historical landmark.
It is. When you see it, like they do, the popular one is the Halloween one. They do like a Halloween night sort of tour that's supposed to be scary or something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, with but real actually, real deceased people. That's not right.
I think they're okay with it.
Okay. All right.
It actually reminds me of the cemeteries in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Okay.
Which I thought was really cool. They have these old cemeteries right in the downtown, which like all of a sudden, hey, there's a neat look. Like it's actually very neat looking. So.
Okay. Well, thank you, Captain Tourism.
All right. Yeah. And
what,
on your
what
left.
About you? What about you for pictures?
Well, my wife threw a baby shower for a friend of ours.
Okay.
It's a big baby derby over here. Everybody's having them.
Right.
And so this is her third kid, actually, but because baby showers are not a North America, or they're a North American thing, not German, she's never had one. So she threw one for that, and I took a group shot of all the girls. There's like, I don't know, 10, we'll say 10.
I don't understand the function of a baby shower for your third kid. Don't you have everything by then?
Yeah, but she's never had the experience of a baby shower.
But isn't the experience of a baby shower people come and bring you gifts for a new baby?
I assume it's everyone gets around and has a big pillow fight. I don't know. Point okay. being, I did yeah. not stick around for it. I took the group photo, and then I took Emily and got out of Dodge. I did not want to stick around there.
I see. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And then my buddy just got in from Sydney, Australia.
Wow.
Our buddy, you know him. You know Steve.
I know him a little bit. Yeah.
And so he got in. He works for Greenpeace, and so he was in for some conference or something like that. So he just got in. So we'll go do a photo walk around Tubingen. He's an enthusiast as well.
Okay.
I forget which camera he has. I got to go look at it. I think it's the same as yours, the T2i.
Okay. I thought for whatever reason, way back when you were talking about him having the XS. Did you have him on the show like way back?
We did.
Yeah, I think maybe I pay more attention to the details than you do, but I think he had the XS. He had just bought the 1.8 lens. Am I remembering the same
yep.
thing? Yeah, and I think he was shooting with the SX, so maybe he's upgraded from then.
He did. I know he sold the XS.
Okay.
And upgraded, and I'm pretty sure it was to your camera. He wanted the video feature.
Right. Okay, well there you go.
So he bought a lens for that, and yeah, so I'm actually going to talk to him about some photo stuff. I'm just glad that spring seems to be on its way.
So is that going to be the next episode you're going to talk to him?
No, you're not off the hook.
Oh.
Yeah, you can't sleep in that one.
Okay.
And then the episode after that, you talk to Don by yourself.
Yeah. Wow, you just let Don talk. I'll listen. You can write the questions, right?
I just think you laugh too hard at that joke. I hope Don's not listening.
you ask the questions.
Yeah.
I will act. No, you write them down. I will ask them, and then we'll let Don talk. We'll see how that works out.
Yeah. Anyways.
Point being,
I'm really excited that spring is coming because I want to use the good weather. I can't wait to have the good weather. First of all,
do you have it?
The good weather?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's starting now.
Okay. It's not yet here.
Okay. But see, the best thing, and this is, you know full well what I'm talking about here. It's not just for photo stuff. It's when you want to take your kid outside when it's super cold and lousy weather. That's like 15, 20 minutes to get her all geared up.
Yep.
I can't stand that part. So that'll be nice to be able to just jump outside and also take a lot of pictures. And when the good weather comes, I want to focus on three things, like three aspects that I want to kind of really hone my skills.
I can feel some photography tips coming.
Finally, the half hour mark.
Thank goodness.
I want to get way, way better. I know how to spot meter. I'm not so comfortable with it that I don't think about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like when you're out shooting, the whole point of getting good at with your camera is so that you don't have to think about how to use it. It just happens.
Yeah.
And so spot metering I'm good at, but it's still a little bit cumbersome. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I want to really get good at that, at being intuitive with that. I want to get even better at being in manual mode. To the point when really what I mean by that is that I want to have the exposure set before I even look at the meter.
Okay.
Like if I get so good at spot metering, I'll start to realize, okay, that's the exposure for this shot before I bring the camera up to my eye, and then just kind of fine tune from there.
Yeah.
And the third part of that is that I want to quit with the chimping. Quit, like, no more looking at the LCD screen.
I've been trying to do this more myself, so I feel you on that one.
I mean, I do it very little.
Yeah.
But I would like to get it to nothing because, you know, you think back in the old days when you'd go travel around or you know, take pictures out in some new city, you didn't have that opportunity to do that.
Yep.
And your pictures were fine.
Yeah, and I'm finding that now. Sometimes I'll take a bunch of pictures, and I'll haven't looked at the LCD a single time. And then I almost in a panic when I get back to the car or wherever I am when I'm first looking at them. I'm going, I hope I got that right because I never even looked, right?
Mm-hmm. And you do, like, once you practice up, you generally do get them right.
I'm sometimes I'm surprised that I'm like, oh yeah, those are fine. I didn't need to look. So yeah, no, I'm definitely making a conscious effort to not spend too much time because you miss a lot doing that.
That's exactly right. And we talked about this a long time ago about having confidence in yourself, and that's kind of what I want everyone else to do as well, is be confident in their abilities, and you know, don't worry about failing too much because you know it's not like you're shooting a wedding or something like that. Don't do it there, but. My plan is I want to go out for a photo walk and just turn the LCD screen off entirely.
Good plan.
Do the whole walk, you know, go out for an hour, 2 hours, whatever it ends up being, which sounds, it sounded a lot more ambitious when I said photo walk, but then when I said an hour, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a lot of time. That's
15.
That's like two episodes of Three's Company.
I bring the audio on my iPod, though, and still listen to it. I don't like to be anywhere without Mrs. Roper.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or Janet.
So, not her I could do without. So, yeah, that's the plan. That's what I'm looking forward to. So, also, I shot, we talked about it, but it's now up, that video I did for Chris Marquardt. Did you see it?
I haven't watched it. Honestly, I apologize. I've been home zero since our last podcast, so I will watch it.
Okay, wow.
Sorry. I don't have comments.
What is 2 minutes long?
Okay,
so
well.
It is a bit of a... It is 1/11th of a Three's Company episode.
Okay. Is Mr. Furley in it?
Yeah, he's in this one. It's the sequel. Yeah, we got him surprisingly cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think Don Knotts is dead now.
He is.
Wouldn't just it be great
pretty
if he
recently, wasn't he?
I don't know.
Okay, let's not go into a Three's Company biography.
Wouldn't it be great if he was buried in the Victoria Cemetery? Yeah. What a small world.
But when you go back and you watch the Mr. Roper episodes versus Mr. Furley, are you a Roper or are you a Furley guy?
Oh, hard to say. It's kind of like asking who your James Bond is. It's because like when you're a kid and you see your first James Bond, it's whoever your first James Bond is.
Right.
Is your James Bond.
Yeah.
And I happened to see my first James Bond movie was, I can't think of it. Doesn't matter now.
Okay. Mine was Octopussy, which is Roger Moore.
Yep. And see, for me, it was the one, For Your Eyes Only was the first one I think I saw, in a theater even.
Okay.
And Roger Moore as well. And so therefore, sad to say, my James Bond is Roger Moore. Because
mine
that's
too.
How.
Yeah.
Even though Sean Connery probably better.
Yeah, and I didn't see any of those till much later.
Exactly, but by then it's like, who is this clown?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's George Lazenby? Come on. That worst Bond ever.
This episode's getting derailed.
It's this week's photo challenge. Let's get back onto that then.
Okay. All right.
Manual versus auto.
Right.
Now we did this. My whole thinking on this was I wanted to basically encourage people, nay, shame them into using a manual setting and getting to know their camera better.
Okay. Yeah. I think there's good intentions there.
So I'm guessing the bulk of our listeners are doing this already.
Hopefully.
To some degree. They're probably using AV or the TV mode or manual perhaps. But maybe their friends aren't. So I would like for the listeners to shame your friends into using manual, like the manual settings.
Yeah, that always works out well. Shaming your friends into doing anything.
Absolutely. So that's why I came up with this challenge. So let's look at mine first because I said so.
Okay, and we're looking at the auto or the manual first?
Let's look at both
at the same time.
Oh, I'm not.
Okay, I'm going to, just so I get a side-by-side here.
Okay. So look at the auto picture. This is my wife in front of graffiti.
Yes.
And took this and a few days ago when the weather, the sun came out. It was fantastic weather late in the evening, so the sun was kind of low. And so I had her stand next to it. I purposely had her stand next to it in a difficult lighting situation.
Right, okay.
Because you find yourself, you don't always have the opportunity to have your subject stand in nice light as much as you'd like to. And so I just popped off the auto shot. It's not horrible.
No, it's okay.
A little overexposed in her face.
Yep.
You know?
But in the background.
Yeah, it's a little bit hot.
A little bit.
It's all there. If you put this in your album, no one would complain about it.
Right, I agree.
Okay, so that's on full auto, the green pumpkin setting, which, by the way, only does JPEG, which you probably figured out.
Yep.
Okay. And then look down at the manual photo.
Yep.
And I took this on full manual, used spot meter for her face, and noticeable difference.
Now, which picture did you take first?
I took the manual one first.
Okay, good. Because I think if you did that first, then obviously you didn't learn anything from the auto.
Good thinking. I hadn't even thought of it that way.
Yeah, I thought, I did the same thing, but I thought, oh, hey, I guess, it'd be an easy way to cheat if you take the auto first and look at what it did, and then you could make a few manual corrections and obviously make it better.
Good point. I never even thought about hacking the system.
Okay, I'm glad you didn't. Okay.
Nicely done. I'm pretty innocent like that.
Sure you are.
Yeah. So, anyway, in this picture here, you can see a lot better saturation of the colors.
Yep.
Exposure on her face is much better.
Yep.
And overall, I think we can agree which is the better photo.
Yes, no question.
Okay.
Other than that,
picture wise, I mean, I did pick a spot where there was like the light was kind of turning into shadow.
Yeah.
Did that on purpose to actually try to compose a halfway decent photo. This wasn't just a walk by snapshot.
Right.
And it chose a bunch of nice vibrant colors to kind of really showcase this. So.
Okay. Well, good job, buddy. I like it. I like the graffiti. I'm a big fan of the graffiti backgrounds.
Yeah, there's a wall somewhat near our house that I guess every year they repaint it and then have kids come out and do graffiti art. But the version that's up there now isn't as nice as the one that was there before, so I was kind of bummed that they painted over it. So,
I like it. It's colorful. Yeah. I like colorful, and I do like the look of graffiti, so I'm pro-graffiti. As long as they're good at it. I don't like crappy graffiti.
Yeah. You'd love Germany. They love graffiti here.
Yeah, I would have a field day with that.
Yeah, except not all of it's good like this. A lot of it's just kind of, spray paint on a 600-year-old building.
Really? That's not cool. That's not cool.
No. No one likes that part. But,
All right. Can we talk about me now, finally?
Finally. All right, let's talk about, Lisa, nice sunshine.
I did this the last bit of light just today, last minute. This was a last minute Susie episode, or I should say a challenge photo. So we spoiler alert, did these episodes a little closer together than we usually do in terms of our time frame. So I basically ran outside before at 0 hour to get this ready and said, hey, can you stand here so I can take a picture? So this is what happened in that situation. Just out front of our door, my wife Lisa and snapped the manual picture first. And you can see I try to create in the surroundings, I try to create a little bit of depth with the background.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun is pretty low and coming down and losing it fast, and it's off to her left. And so I'm getting a pretty decent light from the sunset. And so set it on manual exposure, and that's what you get. And then I immediately snapped the autofoto, which, you know, it's interesting because it the settings, the parameters it chose, I think I shot mine at a 3.2 with a shutter of 1/160th. Uh-huh. And the auto chose at an ISO 100, and the auto chose an ISO 100 with a 3.5 aperture and a 1/60th of a second shutter. So it chose pretty similar parameters.
Yep.
And just a slower shutter speed. And obviously you see the difference. The slower shutter equals a more blown out sky and a more overexposed on her face and on her sweater.
Now, see, this is the thing, is looking at her face, just her face, I like the face in the auto one better.
I don't like the face in the auto one better.
It would be, exposure-wise, Lisa, I don't mean anything, you know, I don't mean anything by that.
No, but I mean exposure, too. I think that the face in the one is overexposed.
To me, it might be maybe a third of a stop. It could come down a little bit. Although now you look, you know what? Now this is confusing. I'm looking at it again. If I were to crop to just the face, if we were to crop this image out to the face only,
yeah,
each of them,
yeah,
I think I would probably like the manual one better.
That's what I'm saying. I definitely do. I did the exact same thing. I cropped them down to look and see which one I like better, and I definitely thought the auto was overexposed. I thought the exposure on the manual is better, and the sky is much better.
You know where I like it better, though, is in her jumper, her sweater.
Yeah, more saturated.
I like it in the auto.
Really?
Yep.
Again, I think the same thing. I think I prefer the darker, deeper color of the manual. Not, and again, I'm not saying this because I did it, because literally the settings were pretty close together. I just prefer, like, if I was going to pick these two and I didn't know which was which, I'm picking the darker side, or I'm in the post-production software, I'm manipulating that auto one to look more like the manual one, because that's my preference. My personal preference is I like those colors a little darker.
I think what it is to me is the separation from her and the hedge seems to be a little bit better in the auto one.
Okay, that's fair enough.
Because that might be what's messing me up. Because everything else, you're right, everything else on its own makes complete sense in the manual one.
Yeah, and I mean, like I say, they are pretty close together too. So I think in a different scenario, it just worked out this way that I was kind of like, wow, our settings are almost bang on. So when you're looking at depth of field, most of it looks very similar. The difference really was the shutter.
Yep. Oh, so. Absolutely, and I don't think mine was wildly different either. It's just a subtle difference, but that's where it comes in.
Yeah.
So I took a picture last week that kind of gave me the inspiration for this, because I was just I was at a party and I was curious, because that's how good of a party it was. I was just curious to know, hey, what would my camera do in this situation?
Yeah.
And I determined, yes, it would have another beer.
And then it would go pee in the corner.
Bam. You weren't even there, and that's exactly what happened.
There was no bathroom in the corner, though, right?
No. We're on the same page there.
Okay.
So I decided, I snapped a photo of some friends of ours inside at a party. Friends of ours have an old farmhouse. And then turned around and snapped the auto version, and inside, this is where you can really see the difference, because the settings are wildly different.
Right.
So you're looking at that right now?
No, I'm just saying, right.
Good. So in the manual picture, it's my friend and his daughter
Okay, I'm looking at it now there just for your for your sake here.
So when you compare it, I mean, I forget what the settings are here. I'm assuming it was ISO 1600. It would have been open up to probably f2.8. Call it 1/60th of a second on the shutter, probably.
Okay, yeah.
Probably something like that, because it was fairly dark in there.
Yep.
And then on auto, it's ISO 400 it uses, or maybe 800, but not 1600, that's for sure. And it fires the flash.
Yeah, which so you can see on his face and nose and all sorts of weird-looking reflection, yeah.
And in terms of his skin tones, they're fine.
Yeah.
Like, it has the exposure right, but what it doesn't do is it doesn't fill up the background.
Right.
The girl in the front left is way overexposed, or at least hot.
Yeah.
And doesn't look good. So in general, this is a situation where, to me, there's no question. Like, there's not even, you can't even consider that the auto picture is better than the manual.
No, I agree. This was night and day. This is a good illustration. And again, in darker, dimmer light, mm-hmm. you know, the camera wants to kind of give you some sort of happy medium, right?
Yep. That's right.
And I think the point that we're making behind the subtleties of you know, the first pictures that we talked about, the challenges that we did on our own, aside from this photo, is that, you know, the differences might be subtle, but still it's kind of like you make it the way you want it to be. With the manual, it gives you that control to just tweak it. So my preference is exactly in the way that, you know, I shot my manual photo. I wouldn't have shot it and I wouldn't have adjusted it to look like that autofocus, because I like that subtle, darker, deeper colors, and that's the beauty of it, right? You could just make it what you want it to be.
Exactly. It's nice. I mean, like, the cameras are very smart these days, but it can't read the scene like you can.
And the post-production software, I mean, in this situation, and we've hit on this point in the past, is that, I mean, you can always make those adjustments after, but, you know, why bother if you can get it right in camera? It saves you time, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's the something I addressed a long time ago. It was, I mean, personally, not on the show, but just I wanted to get everything as right in camera as I could. Now, that wasn't a very good sentence in English that I just said.
No, I think we got the point.
Yeah. I shot some pictures a couple weeks ago now of my daughter and her cousin, and I put them in front of an orange wall, because one of our walls is orange here.
Yeah.
And
your pumpkin wall.
The pumpkin wall, yep. And the pictures are terrible. They're just awful.
Right.
And that's somehow tied into, that's what it was, is I remember I talked to a few people about it and said, hey, what would you do in the situation for post-production and try to, you know, rescue these shots.
Right.
And we got pretty close. We messed around and got pretty close to something acceptable, but the number of hours put in was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I just vowed, okay, well, I'm going to not do that again. I won't be shooting the same skin tone in front of that orange wall again.
Right.
Like, it just looked, these are like some of the worst pictures I've taken in a long time. And it was kind of, it was a somewhat important picture too. You know, Emily and her cousin. So I kind of wanted it to be good, and I really fumbled.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So I'll just get better. And like I said, you could, you know, salvage it in post, but I don't want to do that. I don't want to spend the rest of my life just sitting at the computer.
Right.
There you go.
Which isn't good.
This week's topic, we're going to answer a couple listener questions.
Can't wait.
That have been piling up. And some of them I've answered in emails quickly, personally, but not on the show. So,
all right, then.
Here we go. This one's this one's going to be controversial. I'm not going to apologize for its controversy. It's a very specific question.
Okay.
As always, blah, blah, blah. Okay, he's got some nice things about us. We'll skip over. We appreciate him. I'm looking to make the switch to an Apple computer this week.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. I'm not sure which one to get. I'm pretty much looking for a home computer that can run Lightroom, Elements, and possibly Photoshop. Trying to avoid buying too much of a computer. Can you let me know what kind of a Mac a hobbyist photographer would need? I've been looking at the Mini iMac and MacBook Air, but I have not ruled out the other ones. And that's from Josh.
And what's your answer?
Well, I basically pointed them at your computer.
The iMac.
The iMac. I love the iMac.
Me too.
The computers are getting so good and fast these days, and they can handle everything that you pretty much can't go wrong. I don't think. I mean, like, in terms of, like, specifically with the Mac, I don't know which, like, none of the ones that you buy now, the new ones, are going to be lousy.
No, they're all pretty good.
They're all going to handle everything, but there was a time, like, when it came to video editing, that an iMac wouldn't run Final Cut Pro.
Right.
Or it would, but it would be really, you know, really slow, and you needed something like a tower to run Final Cut Pro. Well, those days are kind of gone now. Like, they're getting so fast that it can handle everything. So you want to run Lightroom, Elements, and all that. So I basically asked him, the question I asked him was, do you need to be portable?
Right, because that would, you know, necessitate having a MacBook Pro.
Right. And the simple answer to that is, well, you can get the MacBook Pro, and then you could always be portable. But if you don't absolutely need to be portable, like I do, I'd then get an iMac.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the iMac. Lisa has a MacBook, an older one, and she does love it, but she's not doing photo editing. So right. I like the screen size, right? That's a big plus. So unless you're gonna also buy, you know, a big external monitor to look at, it seems like a smart move if you don't need to be portable, is the bigger screen real estate of an iMac.
Which is what I've done. I have an external monitor for my MacBook Pro, and my deal is I have to shoot and edit in Germany, I have to shoot and edit in Vancouver and anywhere else that I travel to, so there's no question for me. I have to have a MacBook.
Right. MacBook, and I think you Pro. Get some processor speed too, right, with the iMac versus a MacBook Pro.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think
I don't know the exact specs, but I'm pretty sure it's faster.
Yeah. Yeah, and probably cheaper, and a little bit cheaper, but so yeah, that ideally I would love to have that. And so basically what I would have if I was to start fresh right now, I'd buy an iMac for the house. And then I would buy an iMac in Canada, and then have a MacBook Air to travel between the two.
Right.
That's a lot more money than I would have to spend right now, though.
Yeah. No, so, I agree. If you have to choose one, and you don't have the absolute need to bring everything everywhere, buy the iMac.
Yeah. Yeah, you need a bigger hard drive.
Yep.
Just more robust. A lot more. And here's something that I really, really appreciate on the iMac is number of USB ports. There's
okay.
How many do you have? You have like four or
yeah,
more?
I think it's four. And then I also have a hub, which I advise to get with one that's plugged in as opposed
yes.
to running off of the other USB ports without any power supply.
Yep, absolutely. That's I do the same. I have two USB ports in my MacBook Pro, and one of them is a hub.
Right.
But really, you're kind of limited. I don't know how many slots your hub has. Mine has four.
Yep, so does mine.
And I kind of found that's kind of the border. You can buy ones that have more. They don't work the greatest, I have found.
Okay, I haven't tried any other than the one I have, and I've had zero problems.
Right, mine isn't the most expensive one. I should have bought a better one. It is powered off the USB, but I am very specific. I'm very, very particular about what I plug into it.
Okay,
and so I only plug powered things into it. So I have hard drives that are run on an external power brick.
Right.
So I don't need that's not really an issue. So there you go. And the last thing I told him is. When it comes to the mouse selection,
okay,
it's my opinion that you do not want that magic mouse or whatever they call it.
Yeah, I think it's called the magic mouse or mighty magic mouse, something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not the greatest mouse. I have the trackpad, which I love.
That was my suggestion. I've used the trackpad myself, and I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think they call it the magic trackpad or something, but it is awesome.
I think it's an option now. Like, it's just, do you want the mouse or the trackpad when you buy a new?
Yeah, I think it is as well.
So what I would do is I would absolutely 100% get the trackpad, and then if I missed the mouse experience, I would just go buy either like a Bluetooth, you know, like a off-brand.
Yeah, my parents have a Mac and bought a Logitech, which just works perfectly. It's just way simpler than the Magic Mouse.
That's what I'm using myself. I have the Logitech as well. So I don't know what they're using right now because I'm using the Logitech.
All right, moving on. Next question.
Next question. Hi, guys. Just a couple things. First, yes, we Americans, south of the border, that is, use the term resume.
Okay, because we were talking about the CV versus resume.
Yes. Without the accent, though. I don't know what that means. I don't know how they would say resume without the accent.
Resume.
Resume. I don't know.
Okay.
I think I just insulted a good portion of the middle America there.
Probably. That's okay. It's not your first time.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
So is that it?
Yeah, that's it. His phone, he just wrote in to let us know that they do use resume and not CV.
Okay, great.
The second thing goes a long way back. In one of your earlier shows, the topic of RAW format came up, and you kind of dismissed it.
Did like we?
I disagree with that phrase, okay. Phraseology. I don't think we dismissed it. I think, but he basically goes on to say, like, if you don't know what it is, then don't use it, which we did say.
Right.
My thinking back then, perhaps you talked about it in one of your shows in the meantime, but I've learned that RAW can make post-production corrections in Photoshop much easier. So would you recommend RAW instead of JPEG? So, and then he goes on to say nice things about our show again, but we'll skip those again.
Okay.
So yeah, RAW at the time, when you're starting out, shoot JPEG. Don't mess around because RAW adds so many more variables into the equation.
But he's right. It does make things possible in post-production that just aren't possible with JPEG.
Oh, that's true. And I don't even shoot JPEG anymore.
Me either.
I shoot RAW specifically for that. There's a whole host of reasons, but the main one being that I guess I should have worded it better back then. Was if you're learning to shoot JPEG, however, your goal should be to get good enough to shoot RAW.
Right.
And so RAW requires a basic understanding of post-production methods because you have to add post-production to it. You have to process that image.
Right.
So there's that. When did you stop using JPEG?
Pretty early on. Yeah. So. Yeah, I think maybe within 3-4 months of getting my first SLR, first digital SLR, I was pretty quick to make the switch because I was already interested in the post-production and saw how limiting JPEG was. And so I think you encouraged me to do it pretty early on. And I did have a decent background in Photoshop prior to getting into the SLR photography. So I found it just a much, much easier way to get things right.
Right.
But now I'm finding, again, because I think my intuition as far as the correct camera settings go, I'm finding I need way less tweaking on the post-production end. So now they're very minor changes, which I can do much faster.
Exactly. And I think that's where getting to know how to shoot JPEG comes in handy.
Yeah, definitely.
So it applies, you know, moves forward. But one of the reasons that I shot JPEG early on. I was about the same as you when I first got my first real digital SLR camera. I probably shot 5 months, probably 5-6 months of JPEG. But back then, compact flash cards, memory cards, were wildly expensive,
right?
And not very large. So you would pay, I don't know, just under $100 for a 2 gig card.
Yeah.
Well. On RAW, that's going to fill up very quickly.
Exactly.
So if you're out shooting a wedding or something like that, or some day where you can't offload your pictures, you need to shoot JPEG at that point.
Right.
And then once you move up to like a bigger camera, now that you're shooting an 18 megapixel camera, you'll notice your picture, your file sizes are much larger.
Yeah.
Almost double.
Yep. I find that I'm shooting on now, I think what I've got is a 16 gigabyte card probably. And okay. I'd never even thought, like with the Canon XS, which was a 10 megapixel camera, I was never really filling it up when I was shooting with a 4 gigabyte card. Now I've got a 16, and with the 18 megapixel, if I'm in burst mode and I'm firing off a bunch of pictures, that fills up quick on RAW.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm filling my 16 gigabyte card where I didn't find that was such an issue before.
Right. And the nice thing is, if you're going to make a transition from JPEG to RAW, most cameras, in fact, I think every camera, will shoot a combination of RAW and JPEG.
Right.
Because what happens in JPEG, essentially, you're shooting a RAW picture that the camera is then processing into a JPEG for you. And then it throws out the RAW picture and just keeps the JPEG for you.
Right.
Now, you can keep both. You can tell your camera, keep both. Keep the RAW and the JPEG, and that way if your JPEG's fine, you can just roll with it.
Right, yeah.
And, however, if you want to later on import the RAW and mess around with it, you can do that too. Now, the downside is your camera is now basically slower, and you're going to fill up your card much, much faster.
Right, yeah.
So you're looking at whatever, like a 20% increase in file size.
Right.
When you put them together.
The other thing I noticed about, and again, this is the difference between, upgrading a camera to video and shooting video on the camera is, wow, does that fill up the 1080p recording on the camera, fill up your memory card quick?
Yes, it does. And I shoot with 4 gig cards is all I shoot with.
Yeah. So how much video does a 4 gigabyte card get you?
Roughly 11 minutes.
Yeah, not much, right?
No. No. Although, from my background, that is the size of a single film magazine. Like when, okay. In Hollywood, when they're out shooting movies in Hollywood, their camera holds 11 minutes.
Okay, so that's used to it. But if you're going out and shooting your kid's soccer game or something, you better bring a few cards.
Yeah, you'd bring a few cards. But at that point, if you want to shoot the whole game, then I would probably buy a bigger card.
Right.
But I just happened to come across, a bunch of cards for very, very cheap at 4 gig. So I have a whole bag full of them.
Yeah, and cards have gotten extremely cheap, in recent months.
Yes. Yeah, in Canada, for some reason, the compact flash cards are still pretty expensive.
Oh, okay. And I use just the SD card, so.
Yeah. So, but relative there, compared to where I can buy them here or online in the States, they're quite a bit cheaper down there. But still, they've come down so much that, and they're getting so large. I don't know what the biggest one is, 32, 64. I don't know what the big ones are.
I don't know either.
It's going to go through the roof, but that's when it comes in handy is for video.
Okay.
So yeah. Okay. We got time for one more question.
One more question.
And this one's
saving the best for last.
Well, Andrew would think so.
Okay.
This is a follow-up question to what we talked about a couple episodes ago when I described taking my white background shots.
Okay.
You mentioned you underexposed the background by a stop or so. What do you mean by that? Are you taking the exposure compensation down a notch, or are you actually controlling the whole exposure? Aperture, shutter speed, ISO, based on the white background. Thanks. And that was from Andrew. I guess that was a little bit confusing. I thought about it later, and I probably didn't describe it as well as I could have.
Okay, so try again.
But I'll try to do it quickly, because, they get long explanations. Okay. First off, I shoot manual mode. So exposure compensation comes in handy for AV mode.
Right.
But you basically do it manually. You compensate manually. When you shoot manual, you decide where it's going to go.
Right.
So first off, that's out the window. So by shooting manually, basically what I'm doing is I'm setting up two different exposures. I'm setting up the background first. That's how I start. My baseline is to set up the background by shooting a couple of lights onto it and figuring out what that exposure is going to be.
Yeah. Okay.
So first off, I know what my shutter speed is going to be. I'm going to shoot at 1/200th of a second, which is the fastest sync that my 5D will do. I know I'm going to have a couple of people in the image, in the frame, so I want to make sure I hold focus across them. So I can't shoot at f4
right
on my 70-200mm lens. That's what I'm shooting with.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be zoomed into 200. I know my depth of field is going to be fairly narrow, so I'm going to stop down to f8 to try to hold focus on both subjects.
Okay. Yeah.
So those parameters are set.
Yeah.
And now I have to decide, what do I want to do for ISO? In this situation, I find that I go for like a 640.
Okay.
Now that's what I find. It gives me a good balance between, because I'm lighting with a flash. So if I were to go down to ISO 100, I would get,
shadows, dark shadows.
Well, possibly. I mean, the entire image is going to be lit by flash. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter that much. Yeah.
I'm not balancing ambient, but if I go down to ISO 100, I'm going to need a lot of light.
Right.
To make that image. And so what that means is I'm going to have to turn the flash all the way up to full power.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is a real hog on battery. And I would rather sacrifice a little bit of ISO and use less flash.
Right.
The results will be generally the same, but you'll find that you won't be such a drain on your battery. So you can pop the flash quickly, bam, 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 instead of having to wait a few seconds every shot to power up. So that's where I start. I set those parameters, and then I dial in the background lights. And I basically turn them up as bright as I can, as bright as they'll go until they just overexpose on the image. That way I know where the exposure is. Like if I look at the histogram and I see that my pixels are going off the right-hand edge, that means they're overexposed. The camera can no longer see them.
Have we talked about histograms?
I don't know. We will.
I don't think we have, so you might be confusing a few people, but maybe that's a teaser to a future histogram episode.
That's exactly correct. So what ends up happening is your camera can see blacks and whites, but it only gets to a certain point of black before it gets too dark, and it can't actually see it.
Right.
And it's the same with white. It gets up to a certain point of white, and then it just says, okay, it's gone. It's blown out. And so your histogram will show you.
You're not going to do this now, are you?
Well, you kind of brought it up, but I'm not going to do it right now.
Okay.
You're just making it longer.
Okay.
Your histogram is basically a graphical representation.
Oh, no, you're doing it. You're doing it.
Okay. Just put it on auto. All right. Drive safe, everybody.
No, just finish it out. Now you've gone too far.
Well, I feel like
you might
be you.
You've said too much.
All I was going to say is that it is a graphical representation of the pixels on your camera, what your camera sees. Now, on the right-hand side is the white. So if it's gone past the white, past the right-hand side, it can no longer see it. So that's what I do is I dial it back slightly.
Okay.
And I don't want to bring it back. I want the camera to see the white background, but I don't want it to dominate the picture. I want it to basically be white and blank. You know what I mean?
So I know what you mean.
Far as I can to the right without going over.
Okay.
So what that means is I go right up just past and then dial it back. And I end up usually dialing it back roughly 1/3 of a stop under overexposed. Does that make sense?
Not really.
Not really.
It does make sense.
That
I
was
think
bad.
I think there is going to be some confusion, and maybe there'll be an easier clarification in the future when we deal with histograms specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's clear enough at what you're getting at.
It's like in Thelma and Louise when they're driving up to that cliff, except I stop just before that cliff.
Right.
I stop.
Perfect analogy. We haven't had an analogy in a few weeks.
Yeah.
So
great.
Thanks for that.
Mm-hmm. But I want to get as close to that cliff as I can.
Right.
And so that's how we end up doing that. So I feather that as close as I can. So that's how I set the background. And then
you stop the vehicle about 1/3 of the way from the cliff.
1/3 of a stop away from the cliff.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
And then I have to light the subject, which I end up lighting with one light in a shoot a reflective umbrella. That's what I've been using lately.
Okay.
And depending on your distance to the background, that might actually add to your background exposure.
Right.
So that's something you want to take care of to notice and say, okay, well maybe it's pushing, maybe a slight wind is pushing the car over the cliff. So you got to be careful with that wind.
Yeah, you got to be careful about that.
So yes, yeah, so I'm not underexposing the shot by a third. I'm pulling it back. That's it. That's what's happening there. So.
And one more question.
Do you?
No, I don't. I want you not to ask any more questions.
No, I said one more and I asked one more.
Okay.
Well, is it me?
Just in case.
Are you bad at counting?
Just in case you just try to slip one in there.
No.
Okay.
Okay. Next week, do you have a challenge for next week?
No, I don't.
Good thing I do, hey?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's the challenge?
Next week's challenge ties into what I talked about earlier in the, you know, about 4 hours ago in the show.
Right. I can't remember. What was that again?
I don't remember either. No challenge. No, this week's challenge, it ties in with practicing using your spot meter and not chimping. So what I want you to do, and I will do it as well, is to take a photo using spot meter mode, which we'll talk about more in the future.
Yeah.
And you cannot check the LCD screen.
Okay.
At all. You take a picture and that's that. Now, you could cheat and take and fire off a whole bunch of pictures. And just take it. Let's just take a pants load of pictures, and then choose your best one. I think you're better than that.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to basically make a deal with myself and say this is going to be my picture for next week's challenge, no matter what.
Okay.
And then snap it.
All right. I probably will do that. I think I can do that.
Awesome. So it can be anything you want, inside, outside, doesn't matter.
Okay.
Using the spot, although I'm probably going to challenge myself and make it a difficult lighting situation.
I think that's a great opportunity for spot metering, and we talked about that a little last week, right? About when you've got the bright backlighting coming in, so maybe it's a sunset or for whatever reason, an overcast sky, and then you've got a person in the foreground. Great opportunity for spot metering.
Which you last week you pulled it out of nowhere. You noticed
that
I was doing it.
No, sometimes I do that.
Which, to be clear, I didn't think you were that smart.
I'm full of surprises.
I've broken clocks right twice every day, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Until next week, there, man. Where can people find your pictures?
SchwartzChronicles.com.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, a lot of people have heard of it. What about your stuff?
As always, alanattridge.com, and both of us are at twohosers.com, where you can find everything you need to know about Flickr, Twitter, iTunes, RSS feed, all the stuff you got to know, Google+, all the stuff you have to navigate in today's online web world.
Great.
You can find it at one convenient spot of twohosers.com, and that means until next week, get out there and make better photos.